Good afternoon, Bob. This is fourth session. We're with Bob Dobbs, and my name is Andrew Crystal. It is the 26th of October in 2010. It's a Tuesday in Hawaii. It's the 25th of October and a Monday, and this will be our fourth session. Good afternoon, Bob.
Yeah, I've looked forward to this. I like doing this. We must keep feeding Buzz Coast. He needs more material to hack the hell out of. So he's running dry at this point because Kurt Weller went on leave. Kurt Weller is gone AWOL. And, there's some other people I can't remember right now. So this is October 25th, 2010 from my perspective. Copyright 2010, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved. And we're starting at 4:12 p.m. October 25th, Hawaii time. What is it there? 2:12 p.m.?
3:12 p.m.
Oh, you're only an hour behind me.
Yeah, we're in daylight savings now.
Oh, okay. All right.
Down here in lovely Polynesia.
Right, and we change on November 7th, I think. Well, we don't. We respond to your changes in North America on November 7th. So do we consider me part of Polynesia?
Yeah, well, I think technically Hawaii is the top tip of the Polynesian Triangle, and New Zealand is the southernmost tip of that and extends east, right out to Easter Island. And so if you draw a sort of a triangle between those three points, that's generally Polynesia.
Yeah. Do you have the same kind of constant great weather as me?
No.
Now, why is that? Because you got mountains and things and landmass around you?
I blame it on physics, and Bob, and geography. Like that we're at the bottom of supposedly this planet, so latitude. It's a lot cooler here.
Oh, really? You're not close enough to the equator.
Yeah, no, you're really close to the equator.
Okay, so that's the reason it's so good here. Why is it so balanced in Hawaii? It's never much around below or above 81, 82. Isn't the equator hot?
Well, yeah, technically, I guess, but except for you're surrounded by a great amount of sea.
Okay. It's great to get that old chemical body environment understood. I've lost attention to that decades ago. I'm more of an expert on the discarnate state, you know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. But, you know, every now and again we're sort of called back to this, you know, the Earth, as it were.
Yeah.
Okay, so actually we're going to touch on Earth and catastrophes today, I was hoping. I was hoping we'd go into Baudrillard and we'd start talking a little bit around his book, The Transparency of Evil, which is I got turned on to this book after, I believe, the mention in your diaries. And so I followed it up and found it to be one of the most enjoyable books I think I've ever read. It's spectacular.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And when did it come out? 1990?
You know, I think, yeah, first issue's in 99, although I don't think it made its way across. Oh, no, first issue's 80s, I think, 85, and then maybe in English in 99.
Yeah, so that's
90. No, it's a 1990, I think, in French, and more later in English.
Yeah, so it's at least 20 years old, and in relation to our theme, conscious mediumship, if that still is our theme, we're going to see if it relates to that, right?
Yeah. It's I think it raises a few issues that talk directly to our theme and, in a sense, go past where we were in the last session. We were talking to the Placemarie dialogues.
Okay, one thing. When I first saw a picture of Baudrillard in the early 80s or whatever, in passing, I met him in 1972 in Paris, but that was just in another context. I actually met him officially in 1997 at the Guggenheim at a week put on by Sauveur L'Étranger, French theory 25 years later in America. But what struck me when I first saw a picture of him in the early 80s is he looked like Dave Worster. I immediately got this vibe that his head was like Dave Worster's, which in light of us doing conscious mediumship, there's a underlying physiological resonance here. So just want to put that in there.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm sure it'll come back at some point.
Yeah, Dave Worster being the medium for cosmic awareness.
Yep.
And the one who coined the term conscious mediumship. See, it's even relevant. Even I forgot about that. Yeah, he's the one who did it. So, okay, what do you want to say about Baudrillard? Isn't it – it's not the transparency of evil. Isn't it just transparency of evil?
It is the transparency of evil.
Okay.
He says on extreme phenomena.
Right.
Yeah, there's a couple of quotes that that I wanted to look at. They're both or at least at this stage, they're both in the first chapter, which is called After the Orgy. The first one's on page 8. The second one is on page 11. I'll just read them out. And
yeah, before you do that, I just remembered when I read – when I started reading Baudrillard, he talked about the end of man – which, I mean, other postmodernist guys were talking about that, but he was talking about it in a new way. That theme was what I heard from Dave Worster in the late 60s, early 70s. That's what was interesting. He looked like Worster, and I thought he was the only guy carrying on whatever Dave was getting at. I mean, I had a very, you know, personal projection into Baudrillard when I first encountered him. He looked like Worster, and he talked about post-Rye, post-man situations, and that was pretty interesting to me. So I just want to put that on the record.
Yeah, it's fair. Like I read Baudrillard as having picked up more or less like at where Take Today ends. Like,
yes.
That's why I enjoy him. It's like he started reading McLuhan with From Cliché to Archetype and just pretty much just continued.
Yeah.
Where McLuhan put down. So,
and he comes out of political economy or sociological aspects of political economy, which is what the community that Take Today puts on.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's done really well. There's a very impersonal honesty to what he's doing.
Well, that's because he's a poet. You know, I saw during that week in 97, Sever did a little, you know, interview with him at the Drawing Center in the Soho part of Manhattan. And basically, Baudrillard laid out the great influence of Antonin Artaud on him ever since he was a teenager. And he read this poem he wrote when he was young, I think, or something. And it's in the verbiage of surrealistic or Artaud kind of talk, but all of his later writings reinforce that. He just found technical ways to sociologically prove it. So it might even have been a Gnostic vision, but the that's the poet that he was a poet originally, so to speak. You know what I mean? So that's like McLuhan.
Yeah, and he reads like poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's Well, talking poetry leads perfectly into this, is on page 8. It's just a couple of things. We'll just keep them sort of loose to start with. It's midway down the page. It says, the possibility of metaphor is disappearing in every sphere. This is an aspect of a general tendency towards transsexuality which extends well beyond sex, affecting all disciplines as they lose their specificity and partake of a process of confusion and contagion. A viral loss of determinancy, which is the prime event among all the new events that assail us. Okay, so that was the first one, which is just disappearing.
It was what? Metaphor disappearing. But before you go on any further, I think your mouth is too close to your mic. There's static happening. We don't want that on the recording too much.
Okay, so how about that? Is that sounding better?
Yeah. Now, let me comment. I'm sure others have commented on the death of metaphor, which is obviously the death of visual space, of the signs that literacy and maybe even photography gave, right? It's the abstract function of the mind to have an image. That image in the chemical body brain is no longer solid or a reference point. And what's interesting is that he writes in the late 70s, when he first sort of talks about McLuhan, that the medium is the message, but you can't interpret the medium as a message as a as within the field of looking for determinate causes, for looking for causality. And he's repeating that here, right? He's saying that the causes, you cannot find what's determining what in the linear cause and effect procedure or meme anymore. Is that what you get from that?
No, I get something different. I think he's actually working with metaphor in the sense of translating something into something else. So he's talking about the basic act of either seeing through the lens or hearing through the something or the any kind of metaphor, not just visual space type situation. So it's that collapse of that capacity to translate and see something and something else, because it's all in this situation of the trans. Everything's partaking in everything. So it's not strictly a visual space thing.
Right, it's the collapse of all the mirrors. Now, the trans, as you would say it, is as it means there, is hyper-tactility, hyper-movement, or the movement would be the blur that you'd see before you perceive that it was tactile. Speeded up blur is the closest you can get to imaging what's happening. Now, talking about translating something into another, that's what I meant, I think. So if you say it's more than visual, then acoustic metaphors, basically most human culture as metaphors, as symbolic situations that have meaning for people or stability, that's what's undermined. Is that what you mean?
All of them. In their totality. And that's why I think that's where he's getting at is and because I think it's backed up in the other what is this phrase? Where he points out in the book where everything's sort of disappearing into what does he call it? The converging in a total flux type situation. And so he's pointing to that. I guess what you call the android meme.
Yes, and McLuhan definitely was pointing to that, but he didn't get to write it. And Baudrillard picked it up and wrote what McLuhan was pointing at in his Media Approach to Inflation article in 1974.
Yep.
You know, the post-tactile. So it's – but McLuhan would say we're becoming of the tactile interplay and its hyper speed up, or this the kinetic speed around it, because we're moved post-tactile. So Baudrillard is trying to move to the post-tactile, or he sees the post-tactile – which is how I have it on my chart. The Croker quadrant is tactility squared. And that means the android meme is taking over and being tactile. So it's hard for the human being even to come up with a response to that. Now, here's the question, though. Here's where he and McLuhan are different but both right. McLuhan tells you what the technology is that causes the post-tactility perception. But Baudrillard says you can't say it's caused by technology, because that's a determinant position which is metaphorical, which you can't refer to anymore. You get that?
Yeah. But then again, McLuhan's own definition of technology disappears really quickly as well.
Right.
And, like, he stopped using technology from cliche to archetype on.
Right. And so that's where Finnegan's Wake, in between McLuhan and Baudrillard, is suitable for McLuhan to refer to what Baudrillard's writing about, and it's interesting that Baudrillard will not refer to Finnegan's Wake. You see that?
Yes.
And so
yes.
Don Field comes down the middle, picks up the ball, is a good student of Baudrillard's writings, but does what Baudrillard leaves out, the Finnegan's Wake part. You know what I mean? He continues it on more than McLuhan had to say. Because McLuhan's use of Finney's Wake applies to the global hologram, to the global theater. But the digitized replay of it, what Thiel called digital culture, is what I would call the android meme. And Thiel has a chance to relate that to Finney's Wake more than McLuhan did. Though one could say McLuhan meant that. So you have this triangle between Baudrillard, Thiel, and McLuhan. And none of them really spoke to each other. You know, the three of them there, but they're communicating with each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, Don's equally happy in both the Anglo and the French world, so
yeah.
I guess he is that perfect fulcrum point in that sense.
Yeah, he if Bojer had carried on from McLuhan, Don did, but Don tried to reinforce the book archetype of Finnegan's Wake, whereas Bojer was braver and dropped that completely. You know, he wasn't even going to refer back to Finney's Wake, which is valid, and McLuhan would probably agree with that. Though, then it becomes an argument whether McLuhan was in the end relying on metaphor as a Catholic, you know, as a defense, a psychic defense. Or, I don't know, that's the mystery about McLuhan. Would he have gone as far as Baudrillard? Now, I got this thought before you say anything. That's what we're seeing in the Watson-McLuhan dialogues. Same issue, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I just want to – we've already discussed that in a way with the Watson-McLuhan reference. Okay, what were we going to say?
Yeah, so I was just going to go off into the other quote just give a little bit more context to what we're talking about
and okay.
In relation to conscious mediumship. This is on page 11. It says, "There is no longer an avant-garde, political, sexual, or artistic, embodying – a capacity for anticipation. Hence, the possibility of any radical critique, whether in the name of desire, of revolution, or of the liberation of forms, no longer exists. The days of that revolutionary movement are gone. The glorious march of modernity has not led to the transformation of all values, as we once dreamed it would, but instead to a dispersal and involution of value whose upshot for us is total confusion, the impossibility of apprehending any determining principle, whether of an aesthetic or a sexual or a political kind." And he goes on, and later he says that essentially the only locus for critical activity today is the catastrophe. It's the viral and the accidental. So, which is pointing, you know, when metaphor's all gone, he's saying only the earthquake or only the cataclysmic event can offer commentary.
Yeah, the convulsions. And Coker picks up on that, saying we oscillate between depression and – no, between ecstasy and catastrophe.
Yep.
That would be maybe what's called the bimodern as opposed to the postmodern. Okay, back to – it's really interesting to, you know, hear what Baudrillard says and then be able to find when McLuhan said it. But here's – let's make a distinction. He says that point that no causes, sexual, political, any kind of cause, what I would call chemical body causes, are possible after the atomic bomb. He says that in an essay in 1945.
Yep.
And he says it'll be a great threat to the artistic ego. He points out the traditional artistic ego will find this hard to handle. And probably a good symptom of that dilemma that McLuhan could see through was Norman Mailer. You know, or any of the art world junkies, they had the traditional artistic ego, and they basically their lives turned into an identity crisis. So Baudrillard picks up that point of making fun of the artistic ego and every other kind of humanist or reactionary agenda, which I then all lump into chemical body. So Baudrillard sees that. So now Baudrillard, I would say Baudrillard is picking up the collapse. Because I say the Android meme starts to collapse in 1990. He's actually picking up the collapse of the discarnate, you know, TV landscape or the chip body or the TV body. McLuhan's talking about the collapse for the chemical body. Now, you still have the extension in 45 of television, computers, and satellites. So it becomes Planet of the Dead. That's McLuhan's phrase in the 60s for the – that's the effect of analog media. What Baudrillard is doing is taking the period from late 60s to the 90s, which is the Android memes replay of all the analog media phases, and Baudrillard is actually describing the death of the Android meme. So we can say he's like McLuhan, but he's actually involved in the second phase of technoculture.
Yeah, so – to use your calculus, APAM type vortex. Would that be fair to say?
Well, the AP doesn't.
Oh, the AMAP type situation.
That comes into my thing. He's within the AM. The AP is the ongoing projection by humans of where they're at. It's not limited to the chemical body or any of the bodies. It's the ongoing excavation of the mystery landscape. So I think Baudrillard does move into the AM-AP ratio if you understand AP as the mystery landscape. He does definitely work with that. You know what I mean? But he doesn't get to talk about it like I do. I mean, I come into it later and then use it and talk about how it becomes a figure with Obama and Lady Gaga and Ion. You know what I mean? And a lot of the other strange phenomena like the fake death of Michael Jackson and those other things. That's the mystery landscape becoming figure. Baudrillard is operating in the post-chip landscape, intuiting the mystery landscape, but he doesn't see it becoming a figure unless someone can show me he does. You know, maybe he does, but it gets tricky at that. It gets pretty eschatological at that point. But I think my insight right here is that Baudrillard sounds like McLuhan, but he's actually dealing with the android mean phase, which is the machines, the digital machines replaying the analog phase and imitating, replaying a lot of the effects. For example, the planet of the dead for the chemical body is what McLuhan sees in 1945. So that's a good new insight. I have never spelled it out that clearly before, I don't think.
Okay, so let's bring it then straight head on into this theme of conscious mediumship. Like, what I get the sense that Baudrillard is doing is he's actually toying with the possibility that the citadel of consciousness is not quite as sturdy as possibly it once was.
Yes. I had another thought in there. Because the android meme replays the whole history of analog media, I had a point there. But Baudrillard is doing what Kroeger calls panic writing. There's no Baudrillard in the writing, just as there is no McLuhan in McLuhan's writing. But there's McLuhan on the sidelines with his private civil consciousness being a Roman Catholic 24/7, right?
Yep.
Baudrillard's the later phase where he can't sit on the sidelines and be a private civil consciousness Noah's Ark, using that as time preservation. And the interesting thing is that McLuhan, I think he was felt strong in his faith, but he recognized a crisis coming for the private citadel of consciousness, whereas Baudrillard is the next generation living within it and wouldn't even bother. I think it was silly to be a Catholic. That ain't going to help anybody. But McLuhan becomes a Catholic, you know, 50 years earlier before the digital phase. What I've just said is what you're pointing to, right? The question for the private citadel of consciousness. Not even call it private, just the citadel of consciousness.
Yeah, well, if metaphor is gone, then the interplay is seriously threatened, or at least mimed to the point of unintelligibility. And so the very fundamentals which afford consciousness would seem to be in retrograde.
Right. Now, Eric McLuhan might say, on behalf maybe of a valid part of Marshall's perception, is that this succumbing to the android meme is not necessarily inevitable if you see it as a technological extension. You know, how confusing it is, regardless of how confusing it is, if you can imagine, which still may be metaphorical consciousness, that you can see what's causing it, wouldn't that bring a form of detachment, a way of seeing through it? And that's maybe just another way of the same question. Whether knowing that, you know, if you talk to Eric, he'll talk about the Android meme, and he won't use those words, but he'll talk about the internet and how we should turn it off, right? Where are you going to do that? That's not going to happen. And so even though you can see that a new technology is creating this situation, where are you going to get a position like Archimedes, a place standing off the planet to move the fulcrum? You know what I mean? Where can I stand to have a position? Though that's really the issue here. To know this is that metaphor. So it becomes a like Baudrillard, I think sometimes when he's pressed in interviews, he thinks that writing and pointing this out is a valid way to react. You know what I mean? He just doing it, just performing it, seems to give him some saving Noah's Ark position. You know what I mean? I don't know if it does, but he does talk about it.
Yeah, I guess that's the tension. It's also in McLuhan's work. I think if you go back to Project 69, he said understanding is only half the issue or something like this. I can probably dig out the exact quote somewhere, but that understanding is a halfway point. It's not ever the full.
Yeah, that would be what I call chemical body understanding, chemical body, chemical brain. He knew that you had no philosopher king could handle the global theater, so you had to modulate it and turn it off and turn it back on every 6 months. That was the only way you could preserve your situation is by modulating the environment, not just some kind of psychological condition of understanding, right? Then Bojard, the next generation, has no place to stand, and that's the question. And so that's what's interesting, where McLuhan provided the final response, and everybody, no matter what art they do, and the more glorified the art movie composition book is glorified by critics, it's only again coming up to McLuhan, and McLuhan was repeating coming up to Finney's Wake. There's like no culture after McLuhan. Do you know what I mean? There's just replay, what I call holopathic replays. You can't get past that dilemma.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting is that Baudrillard comes along. It's almost better writing than McLuhan. And then Croker is better than Baudrillard, because Baudrillard and Croker pile in more data. They got more data to work with, because there's an information environment swirling around from the 70s, 80s, 90s, lots of metaphors and images. McLuhan didn't have as many. It was a simpler, less polluted, information-polluted time for images to work with, right? So that would explain that you just get, you know, if someone came after Croker, they would just be even more complex and more scattered, but still the same dilemma. And then that becomes why write a book, and the book becomes the means of consciousness. Because this comes to the end of, I think I've mentioned this before, the end of Take Today, I asked Barry Nevitt, what did you mean? If you have your Take Today right there, you could read the quote. Do you have it there?
No, unfortunately it's at home.
Okay, you know, page 293 or 297. The recently achieved forms of consciousness. I asked Barry, what's a recently achieved form of consciousness? And he says, Finnegan's Wake. So he lays up a book. A book is a form of consciousness. In other words, that's actually using external object, from the literate point of view, an external object as your brain.
So that's conscious mediumship.
That it is a reverse. You're right. It's conscious mediumship. It is using an external medium or media, a figure of a medium, because a medium is a whole environment, but a figure for a medium to arrive at consciousness. Some kind of
exactly. So what do we call the snow here, boss?
Yeah, you. What it is that all a consciousness is today is having an answer for whatever anybody asks. So Barry had an answer. He said Finnegan's Wake, and having an answer is what McLuhan said. You must pretend to know. It's the only form of consciousness left. So that's right, and. And, you know, mediums are charged, psychic mediums are charged with winging it, making it up. So we got to a neat point here. Yeah, so then it becomes the battle of which artifact. Now, this is what I call – I always find out that I've written this already. So now we have a way of understanding what I meant in the memo to Prince Charles, is that a medium used as something to mind consciousness – is what I call your mythic stage. Remember that part of the memo of the Prince Charles?
Yes.
And so now you have the battle of the last – what they call the culture wars is not arguing over chemical bodies cultures. It's arguing over which mythic stages of conscious mediumship you're going to identify with versus someone else. So culture wars is about the form of media use, not the content. So the some people say book is the greatest art. Others say painting is. Others say dancing. Zappa said music. Others say just watching TV. Others say the computer, where information longs to be free, is the best medium. You see what I mean? So it's a battle of the conscious mediums. We never got that far before.
It's the unavoidable and unreconcilable battle.
Yeah. Hoiki, one person holds up a baseball bat, another person holds up a book, and third person holds up a Bible. You know, the second guy holds up a novel, say, like Finney's Wake, and then someone else holds up the Bible. They're both within the book meme. Someone else will hold up a TV show. Like I would recommend The Wire as a pretty archetypal TV show, and then movies. So if you'll notice, you go to any party, that's what the discussions are. People talking about their latest entertainment consumption very seriously, and have to find at a party or a group meeting someone who talks their particular medium. That's where they become friends, right? Someone will talk movies and someone else will talk books. And that's just the chemical body miming the technical problem bankers have today, and the Federal Reserve has today. They don't know what medium to hoik up to make the bond of currency.
Yeah, exactly.
which is it? And that's exactly what McLuhan wrote about in the media post-inflation. Remember, he said Lloyd's insurance place would insure anything because nobody knew what ground was. So you. You would invest in everything. Now, this what we're saying, I get an image from that of that's the way to understand what's happening. So I'm hoiking up speech as the my classic mythic stage, right? I use speech as the best medium because just by saying it, if you said what we just said, that says it.
It's an answer, Bob. It's an answer.
It's an answer, right?
It's an answer to a question that will disappear and nobody will actually be able to spell out and say what exactly the question was, but it was an answer.
Yes, what that would be, and how you would act out, the comprehensive acting out of this answer thing is the way I've lived. I can talk to anybody about any medium. I'm hypertextually itself. I can even talk to the second coming, called Mr. Ion when he shows up. Not many people can do that. They balk at that, right? That's a new mythic stage that is threatening people. So is the ability to flow and interact with anybody is an example of how to be the answer.
So conscious mediumship squared?
Yeah, that's good. And I was just going to say the squared part would be you're faking that. Everybody you interact with knows that you're not totally aligned with the interest they think you're interested in. They suspect you're a triple agent, at least, which I've been accused of many times, right? No, nobody trusts Bob.
I mean, this is shows up in the – I think it's a big part of that movie Inception.
I haven't seen that yet. I'll have to. That's important to see, right? That's probably the latest statement of the same old issue we're talking about.
I mean, it is. It's a nice statement of the problems that we're dealing with here with Baudrillard. Not new stuff, but it does a really nice job of 1960 to 1990.
Yeah, and what it does though, it's like when I get up in the morning. Or whenever I get up.
Can I just interrupt there? Yeah. I love it how you're about to talk about a movie that you haven't even seen yet. It's magnificent.
Well, I know it's always about me and Finney's Wake, so it's and of course, many people have already seen it and told me it's about me. You know what I mean? They told me this already. I was going to say I missed it. Can you remind me of a word that it was just. The weather.
There's Hobbes in it.
Yeah. There's a Hobbes, right?
Cobbs.
Cobbs, yeah. Who is one of – I think that's one of the names in Charles Dickens' story called The Toady Tree, written around 1854, which has a section on my great-great-grandfather, Dobbs. And he plays on OBBS, Obsness, Cobbs, Dobbs, Hobbs, Mobbs, Lobbs, these characters. But Cobbs may be in that story too. But I was going to say that when I get up, it's a new day. New experience, new century date is going to come in. And it's always the same day, especially here in Hawaii. But to see a new movie, to celebrate a new movie, which is replaying themes from other movies, it's just new data for the senses, which the human likes, yearns for. But can you say there is a more complexity in it? I guess you can, because we got more weather. We got more information, more stuff to work with. So to even think that it's repeating the same theme as Finnegan's Wake, that tends toward being a metaphor. Because there is no theme in Inception. It's just new, colorful imagery. It's a new trip to experience. It's all it is, just like every new day is. Do you see what I mean? It's just raw experience.
Yeah, Inception's kind of interesting in the sense that it is a conscious mediumship as well, in the sense that it's so clunky that but it's about incepting ideas, and it's completely self-referential. It's like that where you talked last week about YouTubes trying hard to be conscious of themselves as YouTubes and draw attention to that fact. Inception is that same thing. It deals with I'm a film. I'm going to be very self-conscious about being a film, and I'm going to tell you about how films work and incept you. And so, yeah, totally.
Right. And so I understand that it's about people planting stuff in other people's dreams. Is that
yes.
a simple thing? Now, that would be from a conscious position. Everybody's asleep, but you get into a fulcrum of consciousness so that you can influence someone else's sleeping or zombie state. That would imply a little higher level of consciousness. Or another meta level. So
yeah, it's about the manipulation of environments. It's definitely a medium is the massage, create an environment, let people fill it in type situation.
But it's Web 2.0. It's one person molding the old and big media environments, the old landscapes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's definitely, yes.
Which is what we all do today with our Blackberries. We can mold massive previously massive environments where you're infecting other people's dreams, because when you email someone, they might be watching a movie and lost in or reading a book or working or doing something, lost in that particular mythic stage. You can invade it, which is really what speech did originally. There's a question. See, McLuhan said that all media were violent, and he meant that they crossed boundaries, right? So there's something different where you can speak with your email to millions, whereas with your voice you couldn't for thousands of years, but you could once
yes.
you get on the radio. But now you can send all kinds of things. So it's the email is the email the example of conscious mediumship squared? Is Inception really about affecting dreams, and it's a romantic version, chemical body version of just emails coming into your iPhone?
Yeah, it's environments within environments within environments. It's completely about that. It comes back to that idea of the trans, and I guess this is what I get that Baudrillard's pointing out, is when everything's trans, then there's nothing but total violence or total warfare.
Yeah.
What intrudes on anything? Everything intrudes on everything all the time. The idea of having a anything other than this total, what is it, convergence and a transversal process is just completely unheard of.
Right, and it's exactly how Finnegan's Wake is written.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go to the next Baudrillard quote, if you have one, to see if it resonates with what we've said the last 15 minutes.
Which the there is no longer any. We read that one.
Well, we've done two quotes, right?
Yeah.
Have you got a third one?
No. We can. There's a whole book that we could go through.
Yeah, go to page 80 or something, where he talks about AIDS and stuff like that. That's pretty interesting. It's just random, but I'm thinking of the discussion of AIDS, because you're talking about metaphor and those general principles in the first part of the book. Later, he gets into all the phenomena of the 80s. Star Wars, AIDS, terrorism, all these massive things. And it's,
yeah, no, actually, I think we don't need to go further. I'll just read this one again from page 11, and then we'll go on perhaps and talk about the effects of your coming performance.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so here we go. There is no longer an an avant-garde, political, sexual, or artistic, embodying a capacity for anticipation. Hence, the possibility of any radical critique, whether in the name of desire, of revolution, or of the liberation of forms, no longer exists. The days of that revolutionary movement are gone. The glorious march of modernity has not led to the transformation of all values, as we once dreamed it would, but instead to a dispersal and involution of value whose upshot for us is total confusion, the impossibility of apprehending any determining principle, whether of an aesthetic or a sexual or political kind. Now, I think that's kind of interesting because we're talking about the collapse of criticism, and only the accidental and the catastrophic is the only way to communicate critical consciousness. And yet you're going to do a show in Germany. So what are you going to achieve, Bob? What can you hope to achieve in this environment?
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay, I'll get to that in a second. I'm just thinking about, as you reread that, because you read that before, so now we're hearing it again. This time, it sounds a bit old-fashioned because he's talking as a journalist. Someone talking about mass movements, aesthetic movements, avant-garde movements, sexual programming, all these different movements seem to be the sensibility of the journalist, which is the person scanning the information environment through the end of the 19th century into the 20th century, and not a professor teaching books. It's someone, you know, involved in radio, TV, and magazines. Baudrillard is being a journalist there, and McLuhan was considered a, you know, a defector to the world of journalism by his university colleagues in the 50s, by going on TV. But you're commenting on the turnover of journalistic events, but these journalistic events, these trends, were aspects of the word that makes a market, and they were all that was happening. I mean, would communism spread, you know, after 1917? Would fascism spread? You know, would democracy mobilizing itself through the radio be able to save itself? It's those massive memes of the global theater that Baudrillard is seeing, the dash, the catastrophe, the collapse of all of them.
Yes, I mean, taking it to its full extent, there is no longer an avant-garde, okay? So there's, if there's two people, one of them is no longer leading the way. It's